Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast this morning.
Hello, Jonathan. Good to be back.
So we discuss on the UK Investor Magazine podcast each week three equities with Alan, which we will be doing once more. But before that, we're going to touch on, as we usually do, some of the key themes that we're seeing in markets, particularly those themes that are affecting and or may affect UK-based equities going forward. And one of the things that are really sort of jumping out at me, Alan, this week is how we're starting to progress away from this notion of a reopening in markets. I mean, I'm looking at the FTSE 100 and what it's done over the past 2 weeks, and it's been relatively flat. It's stuck in a very tight range. You know, we're going down to 6,900. Venturing up to 7,100, you know, maybe sort of trading very briefly either side of that, but there's no real conviction there outside of that that range. So I've gone back and had a look through, you know, some of the moves that we've seen, because I think that there's this concept now of moving away from a reopening, the end of lockdown, which did obviously drive shares and markets, and we're moving into this notion of new economy, and where is the value going to be in this new economy. So I mean, going through some of the performances of FTSE 100 companies since the day that we had the first announcement of a vaccine, so that was back in early November. Share price performances here in terms of the top risers and the top fallers since that date. We have IAG up 96% since then, Glencore up 80%, Lloyds up 75%. On the downside, we have Fresnillo down 33%, Just Eat down 30%, and Ocado down 22%. So for me, that illustrates that these stocks that were somewhat put in the category of lockdown shares, of course, Fresnillo with the precious metals and the hedge against market volatility, Just Eat and Ocado, food delivery, of course, people staying at home, ordering food to the house. They benefited hugely from the pandemic. But since the vaccine's been announced, that started to fall away. And we see those share price movements there. On the more cyclical side of things, of course, travel stocks, IAG, top riser since that date there. Glencore as well with the commodity supercycle we've discussed on the podcast is going to be a big theme going forward. And of course, a facilitator of economic recovery in Lloyds. That's a big beneficiary from an opening up and increased activity in the economy. They're up 75%. So for me, I'm looking at these shares now, and I think this reopening trade is done to some extent. Mm. You know, we've seen the realignment. We've seen the sell-off in the shares that benefited, and we've seen a sharp rally in those that were struggling during the worst of the pandemic. And now we're looking at a playing field where I think the market's now looking forward to what this new economy is going to look like, Alan. One of the most important factors for me, I think, for the UK economy is the housing market. Yeah. And this actually plays into one of the shares that we're going to discuss in some detail today. But let me just quickly, Alan, just run through some statistics we've got here. House prices to March in the year up 10.2%. That's one of the fastest rates, I think, since the financial crisis, very much driven by a race for space, which is leading to what's predicted to be one of the most busiest years in housing market since 2007. But we were seeing very little movement in the house builders, particularly those listed on the FTSE 100, Alan. I mean, do you think that the market's looking at this and thinking that, okay, yes, we're seeing a recovery in the housing market, but it's not necessarily going to play through into the long term for profitability for house builders.
I think one of the key issues, John, that has helped drive the housing market, certainly, two factors, actually. Firstly, of course, the government removed stamp duty as an incentive to entice first-time buyers into the market. And secondly, of course, we've had people leaving the city in droves when they've been able to buy a house in the country or to move out. So that's actually had the net effect of driving regional house prices up. Where I live in Seaford on the south coast, we've seen houses changing hands at a real rate of knots, and sale prices that we just haven't seen before, which is obviously great for house owners down here. But there is some data out this morning. Of course, the stamp duty holiday window expires at the end of June, and there is data from the financial data out today that shows the rate of mortgage applications for first-time buyers is tailing off. Sorry, dogs barking in the background there. So the applications are tailing off, and of course that is going to take some of the steam out of the housing market in the interim. On the wider front, of course, the issue is that a lot of commercial property, particularly in the cities, have the owners of those properties have been very hard hit because of course people are now working online, working from home. A lot of companies have relocated their staff to home, so the landlords are faced with a very real problem of A, can they rent the property, and B, if they can't, what to do with it. But the fact is, I think probably more than any other asset over the past 100, 200 years, property is the most buoyant asset of them all. We've seen crashes in property value. We've seen crashes in house price values. But the fact is, you still have a physical asset, which has probably outperformed most other markets throughout history. So I think we're going to see some repositioning in housing stocks. House building stocks will, of course, be hit, the fact that mortgage applications are slowing down will continue to weigh on housing stocks. And I think the way forward here for this sector at the moment, I think we're going to see it tread water probably for the next 6 to 8 months, and it'll probably be next spring before we see any further growth and developments in this marketplace.
So yes, Alan, I mean obviously I'm based here in central London, and sort of going into the city, we're starting to see things come back to life. It is busier, but it's nowhere near what it was before the pandemic. I think obviously the government restrictions still in place until the 21st of June, until things can really get back to normal. But I think the concern for investors should be, or maybe not a concern, but the consideration is, you know, what does this new economy look like in terms of, are we going to go straight back to what it was before the pandemic, or are we really going to truly have a realignment of the economy, which has deep repercussions? Mm. I mean, some of the figures preparing for this podcast really jumped out for me, and working in London and seeing how these things have changed. Mm. There's been 700,000 foreign-born people that have left London since the beginning of the pandemic, and these are typically people working in hospitality, working in the cafes that serviced workers, particularly in the city, West End of London. So with that change there, I mean, how do you see, the commercial side? And this actually ties in quite nicely to one of the stocks that we're going to discuss today in British land. How do you see this jumping back? And, does it get back to a situation, or have we had seen such deep changes in the economy during the pandemic that this is set to have an impact for the next decade?
I think it's going to be a long, drawn-out impact, Jonathan. Yeah, absolutely. The moves that have been made to deal with COVID are not irreversible, but I think what a lot of companies are finding is that actually relocating their staff to home and equipping them at home, having them work from home, is working as well, if not better, than running staff in the office. And of course, the company then has a choice and the option to downsize its commercial premises and perhaps operate a hot desking system or even continue to work remotely. And I think COVID in that regard, ironically, has created a huge amount of opportunities for a repositioning, as you say, of the economy. There are new industries emerging that perhaps historically weren't able to operate very effectively, but can now do so because of the very low overheads they're now having to having to factor in versus the overheads previously, which of course included and required a large office space. So I think this is here to stay, but the fact is this property still exists, and I think what we're going to see over the next few years are some of these commercial properties possibly being repositioned in terms of their purpose and their use to perhaps residential properties or accommodation for homeless people. I mean, there are all sorts of possibilities that these companies will be looking at. And of course, we're going to discuss British Land in a minute, and those are some of the challenges that these companies face. But it's going to take a number of years. And I mean, as an investable proposition, I think I would want to sit back and wait for more clarity on the direction that some of these big property owners are going to take before I put my money in.
Indeed. I mean, just walking through the city, it's astounding to see how much building work is still going on.
Yes, I agree.
For some of these skyscrapers, when they completed one probably during the pandemic at the bottom of Bishopsgate, I don't know what the name of it is, but that is, you know, a significant building, a significant office space there. So very interesting to see how things evolve in the City of London and indeed the rest of London and the UK going forward there. So as we've mentioned, British Land, first company that we're going to discuss today, currently in the FTSE 100, but given that we have a demotion and promotion from the FTSE 250 coming up soon, it is at risk of being demoted. Latest figures are that I don't think it will be, depending on how things move in the run-up. It's the second at the moment in terms of market capitalization from the bottom, lowest in the FTSE 100. Usually there's three movers, but I've seen somewhere that there may only be one mover this time. And depending how share prices move, they could be demoted to the 250, but they have updated the market of their performance during the pandemic this morning, Alan. What did that look like?
Well, it was probably as expected, but not good reading. But ironically, I'm looking at the share price performance. So British Land still has a market cap of 4.7 billion, and it's still paying out currently a dividend of just over 3%. And the shares are trading at just over £5, £5.6p versus the year high of £5.48 and a low of £3.16. So it came off the lows in quarter four last year. I think it put in a pretty robust performance, but the facts are that the outlook for the company is still pretty uncertain. The value of its portfolio fell nearly 11% to 9 billion in the full year to March 31st. Losses were similar to last year because it reported a 1.1 billion loss a year earlier, but of course it's got these structural issues. And this portfolio where it's locked into property ownership, which of course is what the company is about, and it's a landlord. But But the fact is that the company hasn't done too badly in terms of rent collection. Is collected 83% of the year's rent, which I think, you know, is set against the backdrop of COVID and the issues that the company's faced, is still a reasonable performance. It also said in its outlook that it's encouraged by early signs of recovery as lockdown restrictions start to lift, and it's seeing footfall and sales in its retail portfolio 99% and 104% of pre-pandemic levels, which I find staggering. But those are the numbers hot off the press today. It says also it expects demand for offices to rebound, predicts a further 5% fall in rents over the next year before recovering, but it's still optimistic about the future. And that's a pretty bullish statement because, like you, I mean, I came up to the city last week for the first time in over a year, and it was very quiet, you know, traveling as I would normally travel in a packed train. The train was half empty. Victoria Station was, you know, there were a few people milling around, but it was certainly very quiet. I'm scratching my head and wondering just, you know, where all this footfall has come from. But clearly those are the numbers. That's what the company's reporting. And it has been able to collect 83% of its rent over the year. So clearly this company is an expert in this field and it's very well regarded. But I think at current levels, I would be looking to, if I held the shares, I would be looking to offload, wait until next dividend date and offload after that. But I certainly wouldn't be a holder right now.
Yes, I mean, one of the things there, I mean, there's a lot of question marks over British Land. It has had a significant rally recently. But one thing, I've been looking through their portfolio, and they do have, properties in there. Broadgate in the city is one, and you know, they have a number of shopping centres. Drake Circus in Plymouth is one that, yeah. I think as things, you know, start to come back to life, of course you mentioned the 80% rent collection, and I think a lot of these buildings are places where people want to be, in terms of the sort of office space. If somebody's going to have an office, British Land have offices in places where people want to be. So, I think if we do see, a move back to offices, they're well placed for it. And there's another thing that I was thinking before we recorded, you know, looking, and this is something that started to play out, before the pandemic, the death of the high street isn't something new. It's obviously been accelerated by the pandemic. But those sort of retail outlets that are doing well, are those that are placed in places like Drake Circus in Plymouth, where it's not just a shopping centre, it's really a lifestyle centre. Yeah. There's cinemas in there, there's restaurants, and there's shopping. I think that's going to be something that we see success in, because people still want to go to the shops, but you know that the high street, the actual high streets are pretty much dead in my opinion. But I think in terms of people going to shops, British Land again are relatively well placed. But you know, there is this huge uncertainty about how quickly and when this picks up. So yes, I agree. Yeah.
Just to say, it's interesting, you know, we're talking about the actual figures, drilling down into those numbers. Over the year to March, it lost nearly 4% of its of the value of its office assets, which is, you know, fairly moderate, whereas its shopping centres lost 36%. You know, so they have lost an awful lot in the value of their shopping centre assets, but they're seeing strong footfall. So I suppose there is an argument, as you say, with somewhere like the centre in Plymouth, which is, a lifestyle centre, people could be attracted back very early, and we may well see a stronger recovery. But certainly, it's a solid stock, but I think where it is now, it's still too early to call. So just for me personally, I would continue to avoid.
Yes, question marks over that, and certainly going to be interesting to see not only how the UK economy realigns itself and how it reopens, but also how British Land deals with that. So, sure, a sector that we're going to be discussing again and probably touching on British Land in the future. So moving on now, Alan, there's a couple of shares here. Lexington Gold, one I think we've touched on the podcast previously. You know, very much in the early stages of exploration and development when you're looking at gold miners across the board. What's the latest update from them?
So Lexington Gold currently has a market cap of 13.3 million. Shares have traded size 5.4p on the year. 6.4p on the year, and as low as just under 2p. It's currently at 5.1p. The company has had a pretty strong year to date, and it is, as you say, a gold miner. It's a bit of a binary trade, really, but a lot of people like the stock, and with good reason. It has, I'm not going to go into too much detail on the assets it owns, but it has a portfolio of gold assets in South Carolina, which is the biggest producing state, or was the biggest producing gold producing state in the USA until California took over recently. Some of its assets are based around historic historical gold mines, and indeed there's the Haley mine, which was recently bought by Ramarco and then sold in 2015 to Oceana Gold for $856 million. So the work that Ramarco undertook on an old historic gold mine brought it back to life, and sold it on for a huge profit. And Lexington have a number of claims in that region, and one is very close to the Barite Hill gold mine, where the gold that's been discovered there historically is, or the gold sites that are very close by to the Barite mine have actually strong historical gold grades and are believed to be satellite deposits of the same mine. So the company undertook some aerial surveys at the end of last year, and the JKL project, the Jennings Keystone Laughlin project, undertook a diamond drilling program, and this was commenced in February. Six diamond holes were drilled, today the company reported the results of that drilling. It said of the six holes drilled, three were pending, but three of the six diamond drill holes showed gold mineralization above 100 meters. So that's pretty close to the surface in mining terms. Across a 35 meter depth, something like 1.57 grams per ton was recovered, and then a little higher than that, over the 32 meter depth, 9.5 grams per ton were recovered between the 32 meter and the 79 meter. I'm just rereading my numbers. 39 and 35 meter a depth. And the company said that across that area, there were broad zones of mineralization were obvious, and they correlated very accurately with the historical drill results. On the back of that, they've scheduled a phase two drilling campaign, we're expecting to hear more news as the year progresses. But anyone looking at the company, you'll see the share price has risen quite strongly during May. We started May at just over 3p and went on to touch that year high of 6.4p a few weeks later. And that was obviously in anticipation of these strong results today. So more news to come, but still moderately valued. Gold mining companies now, particularly on the back of this new commodity super cycle we've been discussing, small gold mining companies are hugely in demand, and I expect to see much more demand from institutional investors and retail investors as the year progresses for Lexington Gold.
Yes, I mean, certainly look at the share price there. There's definitely investor interest in their drilling program. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. And I'm sure one that we'll be touching on the podcast as we hear more, because I think we are due some more results in the not too distant future there from Lexington. So moving on now, last stock we're going to discuss is Corcel, operating in a particularly exciting high growth area of the market at the moment. It's looking at electric batteries. This is a company I know that we have discussed previously on the podcast, but it is one that's, you know, in the early stages of its growth phase, so that there's always news coming out from them. What's the latest developments there?
So this company is it's got a very interesting portfolio of battery metal exploration projects, and also power generation and storage assets. So it's quite a unique combination of assets, and it's very much on trend with the UK government's aim to get to net zero power production, and also decarbonisation trends overall. Corcel has the company's currently trading at 1.55p. Shares have traded as high as 2.45p on the year and as low as 0.7, so it's roughly halfway, giving a tiny market cap of 5.9 million, which I find head-scratchingly low given the range of assets the company has on its books. It has a nickel and cobalt asset in Mambare, where it has a 41% stake in the asset there, and there's a JORC resource there of 162 million tons of nickel at 0.9% and cobalt at 0.09, which equates to 1.5 million tons of nickel just at the Mambare asset, and that's in eastern Papua New Guinea. In southern, in southeastern Papua, there's the Wowo Gap asset, where it has an agreement, a deposition with the developer there, Resource Mining, the company is progressing towards getting that debt repaid, and it may well be spun out in the form of another battery metal project. But that's that remains to be resolved. Moving to Canada, it has a 50% interest in North Yukon, in a company called Dempster Vanadium. There are 196 mineral claims, vanadium rich shales in the region. And then we come to the power generation area of the business, where we come right back to the UK. And of course, we heard about, and it was discussed across UK Investor, and featured in detail in regard to the IPO. Mast Energy Developments, of course, developing a series of flexible power projects across the UK to take up any slack that the grid might require, or to take up any additional power requirement that the grid might require, subject to changing and evolving power demands across the country. And this is a new area of business which is highly profitable, because the prices that electricity can be sold for to the grid at these peak times are much, much higher than normal. Mast, of course, has 9 megawatts immediately available. 20 megawatts is expected to be on stream within 6 months. Corcel, in comparison, has a 100% megawatt, a 100 megawatt project at Burwell near to Cambridge, and it owns the asset outright. It's a shovel ready battery and solar project, which is set to come on stream early next year. And it also owns the last 100 megawatt connection at the substation nearby. Since that time, it has also announced the acquisition of a further flexible energy project, a 50 megawatt project at Tring Road in Aylesbury, where it paid 150,000 cash and the remaining 250,000 in shares. Scott Kaintz, the CEO of the company, called that move a highly significant milestone, which bolstered the company's position immeasurably in the flexible energy space. And he said at the time they're also looking to explore broader strategic options with the vendor of the Tring Road power asset, Arlington Energy. So the company is rapidly expanding into this area, hot on the heels of Mast, and I think with the progressing mining assets the company has in Papua and also of course in Canada as well, we're going to see a lot more from this company as the year progresses. And I think the flexible power projects are key to driving the value here. I'm actually wondering why the valuation of the company is where it is. To my mind, when you've got Mast trading on a valuation of some 20 to 25 million, just holding the power assets, Corcel to me seems to have a lot more in its portfolio than Mast Energy does. So I do believe at some stage there'll be a revaluation and a re-rating of the stock.
So, of course, I mean, it's a vertically integrated business operating focused on the battery metal side of things. But, I mean, going forward, you know, if you're looking at the actual battery facilitation or the mining of the metals, where do you see the real value being unlocked for Corcel going forward?
I think it's, we're talking about the commodity super cycle. Battery metals are key. I think there's equal value at every level, Jonathan. With the Mambari asset, for instance, an environmental permit was recently granted there to excavate the laterite ore deposits, so that's a step forward. I think there's a number of near-term news items that we're expecting to hear from the company that could trigger that revaluation. But I think certainly the Burwell project is probably the cornerstone project within the company. And once that is closer to coming on stream, we've seen what's happened with the Mast valuation already. I believe that's going to be the value driver for the company as we progress through the year.
Yes, it's going to be a story that I think grows in popularity with investors. It's already very high, with the Elon Musks of this world and Tesla. But I think as things move towards certain targets from the government, this is only a sector that's going to gain traction. So sure to be one that we touch on again in the UK Investor Magazine podcast. So just to recap there, on the stocks that we've discussed today, just then was Corcel, which trades under the ticker of CRCL. Before that was Lexington Gold, trades under the ticker of LEX. And at the beginning was British Land, trading under BLND. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Jonathan.
So just a note to listeners, we had the UK Investor Magazine virtual conference for May yesterday. Two presentations from Trident Royalties and also the newly named Challenger Energy Group, formerly BPC PLC. The video presentations, for anybody that couldn't catch it live, are going to be available on the UK Investor Magazine website in the video section very shortly. So do check those out. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.